Hello, everybody. Yeah. James here. Story time with Dutch Mantel. Whatever number it is, we don't know. Anyway, we can do the plugs. We can do everything else another time because we have a guest on, a very important guest, and he's got a flight to catch quite soon. So I'm going to send it back to Dutch from 1964 when his camera was made. Hello.
Stop it, James. This is a bunch of crap. I had my camera working, then Ricky had all these damn problems. And hey, Ricky.
Hi, Dutch. You always put the heat on me, so don't make
it. I do. Well, I'm used to doing that. I have to put the heat on you.
But, you know, your camera might be bad, but you're still looking good this morning. I mean, you look a very handsome gentleman today. I'm not kidding you.
Stop it.
Sir Sibbity Sam. but you're looking great.
Ricky, I just want to run through all this, and I got a lot of good things I got to tell you. What year did you start? Was it right after the end of the Civil War?
I started about 10 years after you did. Yeah. And so whenever that, whatever you want to say.
Wasn't Abraham Lincoln your first referee? That's what I heard.
Special referee. He sure was. I started Dutch. I had my first match when I was 16 years old.
And Gettysburg.
I was in the territory of my dad. Yes. I was in Mobile, Alabama. My dad worked for the Lee Fields. That's when Lee Fields had Pensacola.
Oh, yeah.
And Ricky Fields, his son, was breaking into business. And just for some reason, they let us have a match. And I was 16 years old. And it wasn't bad, you know.
This is what I heard. I don't know if this is true or not. I heard they went out of business about a month after that match you had. It killed the whole territory.
The next day. the next day they went out of business.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I want to apologize for my camera because Ricky got in here late and I'm trying to get all this set up and then he messed me all up. That's why my camera is not as good looking as Ricky and not as good looking as James.
All right, Dutch Mantel.
So when did I meet you? I remember the first time I met you.
I met you at a Cosmopolitan Health Spa.
Sure did. I don't know what the hell I was doing.
That was probably, I was working for Jerry Jarrett at that time.
Yeah.
You were working for Nick. But see, I started at Nick.
No, you were working for Nick.
But I walked up the dust because I walked up to my winner. Are you Dutch Mantel? And you what? No. I guess I was just a kid. What'd I tell you?
I'm sorry. And then you walked off. Then I come over there. I said, yeah, I'm just messing with you. And then I knew who you were.
Yeah.
So I'd seen you. So.
Yeah, but can I say this? This is not, and I'm not being a stooge or nothing like that, Dutch. People don't understand. In today's world, in our business, the boys never have time to bond. And it's like a lot of people don't understand about. Like all these guys getting let go from WWE. You know, it's like the part about getting let go from WWE, but you're getting let go of the life that you know, the people that you bonded with, the people that you hang with. That's the part that hurts the most. And that's what some people don't really understand. I was lucky in my younger career because me and my dad and you must have put 2 million miles on the highway. And then on that time, I got to bond and I got to listen and I got to learn and I got to have so much damn fun that nobody could ever imagine. And I always wanted to thank you for that. You was always good to me. You always tell me things if I screwed up. But me and you always had a good time together, Dutch. We did. We had a great time. And you know what? It's a part of my life that I miss. That's the things I miss in the business. It's, you know, and that's what I was relating to, like the guys getting let go from WWE and all this stuff. It's just a part of life that you don't want to let go and you have to let it go.
You know, I asked you one time, Ricky, I says, and I remember I was talking because you were the Rock and Roll Express, drew tons of money everywhere. And I remember when it got its start in Memphis. It was a Jerry Jarrett idea. No, it was a Jerry Lawler idea. And I remember going to Louisville one day, and he asked me, do you have an idea for a gimmick for Ricky and Robert? And I thought and thought and thought and thought. And then I says, well, just out of the blue, I said, why don't you just dress them up like rock and roll stars? You know, they would wear the bandanas and all this. He said, that's a good idea. And he went in there and he looked at a couple of magazines that come out and he said, well, that's their gimmick. Then I heard you told me that Jimmy Hart had that idea. We both had the idea at the same time.
Jimmy Hart had the name.
Okay.
Okay. Because they're looking for us a name. Mm-hmm. And okay. So Ricky, Robert, and Jimmy Hart tells Lawler, he goes, why don't you call them the Rock and Roll Express?
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Lawler goes, that's the worst name I ever heard, but we have to go with it. Because we're going on TV. And I was looking back. Let me ask you something, Dutch. Whatever happened to Chief Thundercloud?
I don't know what happened to him. I think he did.
Okay. Sure I was did. Just wondering. And Coco Samoa, I know he died. You know, these are guys that, even though we grew up in the same territories together, even though it's old and you think back like that, but I'm not getting off the rocky road. It just hit my mind because I wanted to ask you that. You know, those two guys, you know, especially Coco, shit, I worked with him every night. You know, he was a great worker, man. And Chief Thundercloud, I never forget, Chief Thundercloud called you. We was doing something. He called me and you were beside, he goes, Dutch Mantel, I know every time I call you, I want something.
Yeah. Every time I call you, I want something.
That's the only time you call me. He goes, but that's the only time you call me. So I started to laugh my ass off, man. But go ahead.
James, here's a story for you. The first night that the Rock and Roll was going to appear in Memphis, and you didn't appear on that Saturday TV before the show, did you, or no?
We didn't.
We just announced Rock and Roll, so the people didn't know anything. So
they said we have a brand new tag team coming in.
Yeah.
It's just a brand new tag team coming in, and it's going to be hot. And we didn't have no. They didn't name us until I said they. It was on a Sunday afternoon in Memphis. We didn't do. Somehow, me and Robert wasn't at TV. I think we were just coming in. I was coming in from San Antonio.
I don't think you did TV. Huh? And I think it was a Monday, Ricky. I may be wrong.
Well, no, it was a Sunday. And the reason why I know it was a Sunday afternoon is because they're having the flea market out back at Memphis. And me, Robert, and Lawler walked over to the flea market and bought bandanas.
Okay.
Damn flowered cheek. He had them hanging on us. And I'm serious. It was on a Sunday afternoon.
Who paid for them? Did Lawler pay for? Oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah, and he gave us our first outfits too, and the one Robert wore, he looked like he was naked, and because it was the color of the skin, you remember that? Because I never forget, because the new tag team we working with Coco Samoa and somebody else, but they hear our music, we come running out, you know, but. And some fan told me after, he said, hell, I didn't know if y'all was Indians or gypsies coming. We had so much shit hanging on us until we got our stuff.
This
down.
Is what I remember about the night. Robert was in the dressing room and he was getting dressed. Yeah. And he was embarrassed to put the stuff on. He was embarrassed to put the bandanas on. And I remember you told him, oh, goddamn, Robert, stop your bitching. Put the shit on and let's go.
Yeah,
and he put it on, went out there. The crowd really, these guys got over from the get-go. And the crowd was screaming. And then Robert, he changed his tune.
So, yeah, but you know, and that's a good thing you said that, Dutch, because, you know, Robert was tag team partner with his brother, Ricky, and me. And you remember those trips we used to take on the road?
My daddy always used to tell me. I'm trying to forget them.
look here, my daddy always told me this. He said, son, when you go to a territory, you're never going to get over the booker or the fucking owner. You're never going to. They're going to be the main event. But always remember this. They got to have a semi-main event, and that's your tag team wrestling. So first I went with Eddie Gilbert. I was tag team partners with him out in Oklahoma. I did a couple more tag teams. And then when I met Ken Lucas, you know, and I don't give a damn what anybody says. He's the most underrated wrestler. He was a great, to me, Dutch, he was the greatest baby face that ever lived in this world. Sonny, I was tag team partner with Sonny King. And then, but we, and Kenny taught me a lot. So when we came back, I was really, I want a tag team partner. You understand me? And Robert hit the, Robert fit in there because this was me. It wasn't a part of that. So I tried to tell the story of our matches by selling. And when I sold and gave Robert, Robert was at, and don't get me wrong, I wasn't the best talker in the world. Robert couldn't say shit with a mouthful. But then you had to go, but I was looking for that, to give him that hot tag and instantly. But the first time we worked on TV, after him being partners with his brother and me being tag, is that we were, our chemistry, damn Dutch, it just, it blew up. Our chemistry was unbelievable in the ring. You know, it's good to have, you know this sometimes too, you know, without saying it, you know, we knew what we were going to do before, right off the bat. If I did something, he knew what was coming after. And it made our timing and our matches so great. And today's matches.
Y'all had some great matches. I mean,
yeah, but I'm saying in the day, you know, I just don't understand it. I mean, I have a wrestling school and I go down to teach some of these guys, but holy fuck, Dutch. When you're at, you know, I'm 67 and I'm still as busy as I was. I'm with my son. Have you met my son yet, Dutch?
I met him.
Badass, buddy.
Yeah.
He's badass. He's still got another year in college. This is his senior year. But about what I was getting to, I mean, nowadays these guys, they go, I mean, you ought to be in the dressing room and everybody's going over their matches. You know, I had to go piss the other day and I had to duck three clotheslines and reverse a goddamn hip toss to get into the fucking bathroom. You know, I mean, it's amazing to watch these guys back here, man. They just, and then it's all day. First, they all go to the ring. They go over their matches, blah, blah, blah. Then they come back and they sit down and they still. And I'm thinking, and now here I am 67 years old. I'll go grab a headlock. You know what?
We never did that back in our day. They would come in there. I have, seriously, I have gotten a finish in Memphis going to the ring for the match.
Okay, listen, that's the way the matches was. I remember in NWA, you know, Dusty, you know, but he kayfabed. Bill, especially Bill Watts, when I worked for him too, 99% of the time you didn't get your finish till you got in the ring. And they didn't tell you we're going to do this right here. They say, all they tell you is the heel's over or the babyface is over. That's all they would say. But see, you had such great workers at that time. Holy shit. You could just make magic every night and come up with a hell of a finish.
This is one thing that I'll never forget. Because we made all those videos on you guys in Memphis.
Yeah.
And then when Bill Watts wanted you to go to Mid-South, they said, okay, you can take them. And Jerry Jarrett started sending them those videos that Memphis had done on you and Robert. I think he started about a month before you got there. By the time you guys got there, there was no get over time. You were already over. And they brought you in on the first night there. And you won the titles the first night in, right? From the Russians. Yes?
Yeah. And we were in Lafayette, Louisiana, our first night in. But when we got there, Dutch, I mean, you could not believe it. I told Robert, what the hell is going on here? I mean, there's cars backed up, everything. And we pull out, we pull up to the back.
Yeah, you said, the news runs up to us. What's that main event tonight? Must be hot.
Listen, they a woman come up and stuck a camera in my face, and she goes, "Tell me about y'all. Are y'all the Rock and Roll Express?" And she tells me there's been people camped out here for a week to buy tickets to watch the wrestling match tonight. And, you know, then you're looking around. I'm thinking to myself, well, holy shit, Robert, they come to see us. And it was, but you know what, old Dutch, it's not it took the boys. You know, Nikolai, Volkov, and Barry Dorso, they were together then. And amazing. You know, it's like you said, you don't go over hot spots. You don't get to talk to the heels. Hell, Bill Watts will fire your ass in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And we just went to the ring with them. And it was just like magic. Holy shit. Yeah, it's, you know, and that's the same thing Dusty did with us at NWA. You know, at that time, it's, you know, All American Kids, Rock and Roll Express. They sent all the videos in there. We worked with Ivan and Barry Dorso again. They were the world champions, and we beat them.
So you beat. So you had the same opponents on the first night in Oklahoma territory as you had when you went to Charlotte.
Yeah, but
the Russians.
The only thing was different was Nikolai and Ivan Koloff. We had Ivan. And did you ever have an experience to beat Ivan Dutch or work with him?
Oh, Ivan Koloff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What a hell of a worker.
They had another Russian there one time.
I was Nikita. Oh, you talking about old beat Boris. Boris.
No, not him. They had another one there. I swear to God, I've been in easier street fights.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
In Asheville, North Carolina, I swear I almost left the ring. And if they asked me why I left, I said, what? Well, hell, I couldn't beat the guy. Shit, he was beating the dog shit out of me.
Oh, I remember him when he came in. He didn't stay long.
No, you know, I see why.
His name Crusher Khrushchev or Vladimir Petrov?
Yeah, yeah. What was his name, James?
Vladimir Petrov.
Yeah, Vladimir Petrov, yeah.
God.
Yes,
he
I
was
remember
horrible.
Him.
Anyway.
Look here, you lock up with him. Look here, you lock up with him and break your own arm, you know, and he'd headbutt you. Did I ever tell you the story the first time they brought Nikita Koloff in?
No.
I mean, when I
tell me that story. Tell everybody else. That's why the people tune in here. They want to hear stories.
Well, okay, listen. We're in Cleveland, the old stadium they had there. We had a baseball game. And we went to wrestle after the baseball game. This is Pat and Nikita Koloff. That's the first time that Robert and I got to meet him because it's always Ivan and Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen Nikita? I asked him this. I lock up with Nikita, and Dutchie headbutts me so hard. I go down on my knees, and I fall back onto the ropes. I went, holy shit, accident. You know, and he's walking around. He ain't paying me no attention. I lock up with him again. That this son of a bitch headbutts me again. God damn, I went back and I told Robert, this was 5 minutes in the match. I told Robert, I says, pull this big motherfucker off of me. He goes, what's that? This time I locked up Dutch. I went like that right there. He headbutted my elbow and it split his eye all the way up. Blood was going everywhere. Boy, is he cussing. God. But when I locked up with him that third time, look, had that head back. You
oh
see,
my God.
He didn't know. And I didn't know because I ain't never worked with him before. But when I worked with him that third time, buddy, he knew how to put that head back. Mm-hmm. So he tells me that every now and then. So that's the greatest education I ever got in a wrestling ring.
Okay, where was business better? Was it business better in Charlotte? I mean, in Mid-Atlantic?
What's that?
Where was business the best for you guys? Mid-Atlantic?
Well, Dutch, you know, it's hard. And I got to say, are you there?
I'm here. My phone just went off.
Okay.
That was
you was asking me about.
That was Bill Watts
calling
me.
Where was business better? Now, yeah, me too. Vince keeps calling me, wanting me to make Monday Night Raw. I told him I can't do it, dude. Leave me alone. But you know, Dutch, and to really understand, you talk about going into Mid-South. I've never been a part of something that ever work like that, because it's every wrestler's dream. It's not to be that superstar, but it's to work on top in Papa territory.
Mm-hmm.
Robert and I, and along with the Midnight Express, along with Nikolai Volkoff, along with Wrestling 2, Magnum TA, we actually popped Mid-South. You know, if you ever read Bill Watts' book, you know, he owned the territory for 12 years. He said he made more money with the 2 years that Robert and I was there than he ever made in the whole 10 years he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And
he did.
He's paying all the boys. And it did. See, that was the sensation of going from armories to the big, to the bigger high school gyms, to the big auditoriums. And we did. You come in there for a while. You seen that. We worked those big auditoriums. And we went into hell. We went to the Superdome. But they'd cut the Superdome in half.
Yeah.
But that whole other half would be sold out. Dude, this is in 1983, and you got 40,000 people at a wrestling match? Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, and but then,
I remember one night we were in the Superdome. That's a Saturday night. We was in the Superdome, held up a house. The next day, I was at a damn high school gym up there in Arkansas someplace. And I said, damn, this is a damn switch. They like 200
it
people.
It was the longest. And see, it's what these younger guys, man, they're so, you know, I'm glad for it. And like people like you and people like me, we paid the rate for these guys. But see, we didn't have no travel agencies. We didn't have people to book our hotel rooms. We had nothing. You got there the best way you could. And remember the every other weekend you did the Oklahoma City and Tulsa.
Don't remind me.
And if you flew it, Bill Watts would give you $100 extra on your check, you know, but it costs golly, you know, back then. And it was the longest trips, but I had, that was, and I'm honestly going to say this, I had more fun in that territory than I ever had in my life, because you're on the road every day with the boys. And that's what I was talking about, bonding. We had some of the greatest times together. And you know that. In Memphis, you know, I got to put Memphis up for you. We wasn't a part of it. You were on top. You and Lawler and Dundee and all them. But, buddy, it was like Woodstock there. I don't give a damn. Everything sold out. I mean, you come in on Friday nights to the hotel because you had to do Memphis TV that morning. Hell, you can't even find a place to park. It's just packed in there, man, from the fans being there, knowing that we're in town.
Yeah, the hotels were sold out.
Oh, yes. We had to call and make reservations. Whether it was there every week, we tell them we'd be back next week. Leave you up, you know. It's the way we had our rooms. But, hell, then the boys stayed three or four together in a room.
We was like a bunch of immigrants like they are in New York now. We'd all just pack into those rooms and stuff. You wouldn't have to get a room. Just take your bag up and find the first wrestler you saw and said, hey, you got a room?
Yeah, come on in. And it was so good because the fans, the wooden room, they bring food to eat. They have food. You go in there and eat.
Beer.
Drinks. What? Yes, they had it all for you every week. And people appreciate it. They brought you gifts. They did everything. And it's greatest shit in the world. You remember Miss Linda down from Bolivar?
I remember her.
Big lady. And I love
her. She was a big lady.
I love her to death.
She'd make better time rolling.
No, but I'm just saying she was always brought us food, cooked this shit, asked you what you want next week for when you come in from right. It was so cool. I like them people. But what I'm getting into, Dutch, but see, it's a great thing when you pop a territory. But then, you see, I was in a Superdome. Matter of fact, Muhammad Ali was there. And my oldest son, Jonathan, was in the – Muhammad Ali is sitting in the floor with my oldest son playing cards and talking. And I never forget Bill Watts come in to say something to him. He said, hey, I'm the promoter, Bill Watts. So I'll talk to you in a few minutes. I'm talking to this kid now.
Mm-hmm.
Swear to God, you know. And then Bill Watts turned around. He goes, and Muhammad Ali goes, you're the promoter? He says, yeah. He says, oh, you're the one that steals all these money from all these guys in here, huh? I went, Hey, I'm sitting there going, holy fuck, I can't believe he said that.
Did he say that?
But I noticed. Yeah, he did. And I noticed Ric Flair walked in, and he had a little man with him. I didn't know. The little man sat over in the corner, and Ric Flair was talking. And then, you know, finally everybody up got up and left, and this man walked over to me, and he says, hello, I'm Jimmy Crockett, and I own NWA. He said, y'all are world news, you and Parker. Mm-hmm. I said, beg your pardon. He said, you're world news. I said, look at this. And y'all popped this territory. And Dusty and I are taking over TBS, and so we're going to go worldwide. And we'd like for you to be a part of NWA. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I says, well, we're doing real good here. He says, I know you are, but this is the opportunity of a lifetime. And he says, I know your dad. You can ask your dad about me. And I was looking for something new. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to ride my ride out. I wanted to go out there. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, whatever you're making here, I'll double it. You know, so it's a lot to think about when you're a kid, too. But you know what? The reason I'm not rich today, Dutch, is it's why I'm making my kid graduate college. If I knew now, then I'd be the richest man in the world. I can't believe we got screwed. But it was my fault because I wasn't educated enough to know. And I'm serious. I was just a young kid.
I was going to ask you about that. How much money do you think, did you get paid for your pictures in Mid-Atlantic, Charlotte?
No.
You get paid for t-shirts or anything?
No. We got screwed, Dutch, out of everything. What? Because I wasn't educated enough to know. Now, I'm going to tell you something. My biggest year in the business, and I didn't know this till later on because I wasn't educated enough to know. And this is the reason we got fired and I left, because I finally figured out we didn't get fired. Well, I'll go into that in a minute. But my biggest year was $125,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Bobby Eaton, who we were wrestling, them guys made $250,000 a year. And I'm going, holy fuck, I didn't, you know, then it really got to me. Then after they closed down, you know, Robert and I sued them about our stuff. And you know what? And the damn gimmick man, they brought him in and they told him to tell the truth and we would not prosecute him. He said, well, I made $1 million off the side on them. But other words, he stole the million.
Off the website?
Off our gimmicks. No, they're gimmicks. Wow. We didn't have websites then. They didn't have website then, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know,
so he stole your money.
All this rock and roll stuff. Huh?
He stole your
money.
They
stole from us. What's that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They stole from you.
Listen to me. They raped me. They raped me, and because I wasn't educated enough to know. Then when I figured out, a lot of things. See, a lot of things went on, Dutch, that nobody knows about. And anybody.
Well, they know it now.
When you're not in that fucking meeting with me, Dusty, and Crockett, okay? You don't know.
No.
You see what I'm saying? So don't act like you know. Because you wasn't in there. I don't know precisely to here. Richmond, Virginia. You see that picture?
Uh-huh.
Richmond, Virginia. I beat Ric Flair for the world title.
Yep.
And I came back to the dressing room. And they told me, so now we can put the world title on you. We're going to have to let your partner, Robert, go. He says, well, he's going to have to put people over that you beat, and you're going to have to beat him too. And it wasn't that, Dutch. It's when I sparred, I just handed the belt back to him. I said, I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that. And it's like I told you earlier, I have some bad problems. One of them is being honest. And another one is loyalty. When I give my heart, my loyalty to you, I mean it. When I tell you you're my friend, you're my friend. I love you. I love you. And that's it. It's nothing else. Nothing else matters. That's when I go to bed at night, by God, I can go to sleep and I don't have to worry about where I screwed somebody and the Lord Almighty upstairs knows.
See, I read that one time that you, they were going to put the title on you, or they did put the title on you. Then they told you they're going to release Robert. And you said, no, I'm not doing that. And you said, just take it back or don't do it because I don't think that's right or something.
Well, yeah, that's what happened. But listen, I was the luckiest guy in the world at that time. The only reason all this happened was because Magnum TA had a car wreck and they were proving him for the world championship and they didn't have nobody to go in there. And Ric Flair, you know, he fucking loved us. Well, he loved me anyway, man. He's the one that sent Jimmy Crockett down to Louisiana to watch us because he's been coming in working the territory. And he said, he's anything. Guys are over, man. Jesus. But we did all that. But, you know, then it comes down to where, and listen to me, I didn't do no more drugs than anybody else did. Only reason you had back then was cocaine. And it's because they didn't make monster drinks then. They didn't do all this stuff. Hell, one night I'll be in Tampa, Florida. The next night I'll be in Los Angeles, California. Hell, you didn't even... I even flew from Los Angeles to Tokyo and wrestled Ric Flair and got back on the plane. And we wrestled 2 days of how long it took us to get back to New York that night. And you wonder how come I snorted cocaine?
No shit.
Well, hell. Okay, now, I told a guy the night, I'm in the dressing room, and I watched this kid drink 5 monster drinks that big. You hear me? That tall. And I did tell him that. I told him. I might have been wrong. I said, dude, you ever heard of cocaine? I said, one line? I said, it's fucking cheaper than what you're doing there. I mean, and I think probably better for you. I'm serious. But I grew up getting all that out. But same way. I told Cody. I told Dustin Rhodes, too. I said, listen, buddy. I loved your daddy. I loved all of them. And him had more fuck you fights than you'd ever fucking know. I said, you don't know. And if you ever worked for Dusty, you know. I mean, the first time, this is when it really got me. And Robert don't even know this. You know, I go to the office. Dusty called me down to the office every Monday. And this is a great compliment, Dutch. And even I did a podcast for his granddaughter, and she told me, she said, I asked my grandpa, besides yourself, who's the greatest babyface in the world? And he says, above me, Ricky Morton. He said, it was the greatest babyface because he, and this is what I was getting to, because he would call me down to the office every Monday because we do TV on Tuesdays. And he would set up an angle. And see, and a lot of guys don't understand this. When you're a booker and you have something in your mind, and you look around, even though they're great workers, you can't make that son of a bitch understand what you want, what you really want out of this angle. You see what I'm saying? And I understood that. And Dusty liked me for that because I understood. And see, and the only thing that was about was selling, was getting the angle over what the hell done to you and make the people believe what you're doing. You know, I had that ability. It wasn't that. I just had, and see, that was for me when I rode down the road with guys like you and Ken Lucas. They made me understand that, you see, it wasn't nothing that I was better. But when I was a kid, I listened because I wanted that. My daddy telling me, said, my main event, brother, is just as good as main event. Sometimes you got a job, you see. And when you're over like that. But I never forget when we first shot an angle with the Midnight Express and they had an A team and a B team. We were the B team. And Dick Murdoch got in trouble and he had to be on the B team. But I'll get to that in a minute. But we were in Charlotte, North Carolina. We wrestled the Midnight Express and the A-Team were in Baltimore, Maryland, Ric Flair, all them. Dick Murdoch, I think, wrestled George South, the semi-main event. That's what kind of card we had. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Kansas Jayhawks were then there then.
Oh, we'd have been on that. We'd have been on that card with you, I'm sure. But
yeah,
continue.
But listen up. And in Baltimore, you know, it didn't draw nobody. You hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in Charlotte on a Sunday afternoon. Dusty calls me. He said, "Come down. You come down to the office today." He said, "I want to talk to you about an angle." Sorry. But I go in there and I sit down in front of him, and Dutch, he looks at me and says, "Son, I know you're in the wrestling business, but you got to understand one thing." He said, "It's rules that you got to learn for yourself and you'll learn along the way." I said, "What's that, Dutch?" He said, "You never sell out a fucking arena when I'm not on it."
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that story.
Yeah. You never sell out a arena when I'm not on the card. But then it was just natural. But I'm telling you, he had Mick Dirt on that, and we're doing the TV, and he goes, and Mick Murdoch, guys out there, any of y'all ever didn't meet Dick Murdoch, I feel sorry for him. He was the funniest, greatest individual. Work his ass off. I mean,
And do nothing and have the people falling out of their seats. I saw him one night. He took an arm drag. I swear to God, the people went nuts. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Why are they going? Because of the way he sold it. He was still selling it 5 minutes later, grabbing his back. Oh, my God, getting mad at people.
And that'll be another story to tell you why in a minute. But Dusty, we was here, and Dusty looks at Murdoch and says, "Hey, did you learn your lesson yet?" He said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Are you ready to come back to the 18? And Murdoch goes, "Well, hell no. I'll make more money on the B team."
That sounds exactly like
Dick. Did you ever wrestle with the old Sportatorium in Dallas on the ring they used to have there? Though I'm talking about the old ring Devon Aries had there.
I don't know if it's an old ring or not. I think they took it down.
Okay, now the first time I went there was years ago, and I'm wrestling Dick Murdoch, and Murdoch tells me, he goes, "Don't even go to a knee in this ring." And I says, "What?" He said, "Do not take a bump." And I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "You'll find out when you get out there." Well, see, I didn't know this, Dutch, and I don't know a lot of people know this. You know, that ring was a concrete stage with four posts in it. With the thing over, it was concrete. And I got out of the rain. I'm going, holy shit. And if you notice back then, and years ago, but I think they finally took it out, put a ring in the middle. They didn't have, you watch the matches, nobody took a bump. Nobody even went off their feet. And I did something where Murdoch hit me, and I went to a knee, and damn, my knee didn't kill me for a week. And I'm thinking, boy, how hardcore. That's when the first time I got to meet Bronco Lubitsch. Bronco Lubitsch, the referee.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to cover Dick Murdoch, and he counted with his feet. He went, one, two. Hey, and me, you know, Dickie's so funny anyway. I'm wrestling him on TV, and I'm crying, Dutch. I'm laughing so hard. I can't. Trying to kayfabe, trying to get the people out. But other than that, gosh almighty.
Let me ask you about Junkyard Dog. Was he over?
You're damn right, buddy. You're damn right he was over. You know what? I learned a lot from Dog, too.
Yeah.
You know what? See, when you're in a territory back then, and you know, just like I do, when you're in the territory, you got to have your top baby face. You got to have your top black star. You know, your Spanish star. But Junkyard Dog, he was that everybody's star.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that smartened me up, especially with the Midnight Express. He says, "Now, when you go out there," he said, "I've been here many a times. And now when they get in the heat on you and the people get quiet," he He said, "They get quiet real loud of the ring because they're coming in." And he was right, buddy. I mean, look here, boy, you have them people going, and all of a sudden, you don't hear nothing. The whole E section are coming to the ring. But Dog was over like that. And you know what? And he was good at what he'd done, too. He was a great talker. You know, Sylvester was a good friend of mine. And, you know, the business lost treasure when he lost him, too. You know, he went to, he made his oldest daughter a promise that he'd go watch her graduate. And he drove to watch her graduate over in North Carolina. And on the way home, driving back to Louisiana, fell asleep. And, got killed in a car wreck. Chuckyard Dog was my friend. I liked him. You know, we all get a lot of heat for a lot of things that we've done. But he had the biggest heart of any man I ever seen. Us, you know, and he didn't take no shit off nobody either.
Yeah. Good guy. I was in Puerto Rico with him. Hurricane was coming in.
Yeah.
And we both rushed to the airport because I'd done this already twice already. I would beat the hurricane there and I'd leave. On this one, they'd already shut the airport down and Dog, we couldn't get out. Oh my God. And then we had to go back to that hotel and we sat back and all the lights were knocked out. The only thing on was a street lamp that had a battery in it. That's the only reason it was on. And we sat there all night long for that hurricane coming through. Next day got up, the place was all to hell.
Yes.
All the stores and restaurants, of course, are closed. And me and Junkyard Dog went down to a big hotel on the corner, and they had a soup line there. If the people wanted something to eat, you stood in that line, and they would give you some soup and some bread or something. I remember me and Dog standing there, and some fans come up, and they said, "Are you Duty Dutch? Are you Junkyard Dog?" We said, "Yeah."
Hey, you should have did like you did to me. No.
I hadn't eaten like 24 hours. Hell, it was. I don't give a crap what it was. I was eating.
You know, I learned that lesson when I was in Japan. First time I ever went to Japan, you know, when you went out of the city, it wasn't Americanized. They bring shit to your plate, and it'll still be crawling. You know, you got eating that shit. Okay, after 2 days, you go back to that same restaurant, and you order three of that shit. You so hungry, I ain't lying.
How long were you in Smoky Mountain?
Oh, I was there to I'd say the whole time, about 3 months before Jimmy Cornette fired me. Worst thing he ever done. Mm-hmm. You know, I was there. I loved Smoky Mountain Wrestling, too. This was a deal between Tracy Smothers and me. And Tracy got to Cornette before I did, so he fired me. And 3 months later, they closed the territory down. But I had a good run there, Dutch.
Yeah, you did.
You know, I had a good run there. I mean, I still here. I stayed here. Sure, as I live up here in Bristol, up here in the mountains. Mm-hmm. I moved up here in Smoky Mountain. And back in 92, 93, something like that. And I've been here ever since. You know, we still have my mom and daddy's house in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I live up here.
Who's in that house now? You rent it out or?
No. My oldest brother, his wife died. Mm-hmm. And then, they stayed there, him and my other brother, until my mama died. You know, my mama died in the house there. And my little brother died there a couple of years ago. My little brother, Donnie. Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't feeling good. And he went to the doctor, and they told him he had liver, lung, and kidney cancer. So we took him to the hospital, you know, for his first treatment. And then the doctor just come out and told me. I'm glad he didn't tell me the truth. He said, just take him home. He says, we're going to put him on whatever you call it. When the nurses come out, hospice. Put him on hospice. and he's going to die in 2 to 3 months. He said he's eat up. And we took him home, Dutch, and 2 or 3 months, he died.
You well, know, I hate to hear yeah. that.
Yeah, and you knew my mother, too. My oldest son was telling me. Mm-hmm. I was talking to him early this morning, Dutch, and he was telling me about my mother. You know, she had that lung CPOD, or you want to call it. I don't know how you spell it, but it's he laid in the bed with her. He was laying in the bed with her, hugging her, because he loved my mama, my oldest son did. And she died in his arms. You know, it's sad, but it's life. And you knew my daddy.
Yep.
My daddy, you knew my dad.
Mm-hmm.
As I hope it's the same thing, because this is what I'm trying to tell Robert. And Robert don't get it, understand. And really, it's okay. It don't matter. I mean, we're too old to be wrestling anyway. And for the last year, Dutch, we'd go to the ring, and Robert just stand on the apron. He never got in the ring. You know, he couldn't. But it was all right. I felt obligated.
What else is different?
Yeah, but I felt
between obligated now and 30 years ago.
Yes. I got mad at him one time. I told him, I said, next time I just get 8 by 10, stick on the goddamn ring post so nobody will miss you. You know, but you know, sometimes you feel obligated, Dutch. And like I told you, I'm a lawyer, and I don't know. I kept him. But now, what I was getting into, though, is now I'm spending time with my son, mm-hmm. like I spent with my daddy on the road. And see, he's a little bit. You know, he's 22. I'm with him. We work shows. We both work for NWA. Matter of fact, my son's a head of marketing for NWA, and it was picked up. That's what he's taking in college. He has a contract there to when he gets out of college, or grow up further if he wants to. But we get to spend a lot, and me and him do. A million. We're on independence, so we're the independent outlaw, brother. We're the kings mm-hmm. of independence. And I'm serious. And we do good business, Dutch. You know,
I bet you do.
Yeah, we do good business. And
I have a question here that
yes.
somebody has asked me to ask you about. Have you ever thought about cutting your hair in a match?
Well, I was going to do that. I was going to do that with the Bushwhackers. They were the yeah. sheepherders then in North Carolina. I'm going to do a thing where they're going to cut my hair to do an angle. But Dusty was pissed off at us, and I think George South beat me in a match and somebody else. You know what I'm saying? And then I got where I just didn't give a shit, and I didn't do it. But no, this is who I am. This is mm-hmm. who I am. This is who I am. I'm never going to cut my hair. You know, you get your good people on. And I tell my son about this, too. On social media, when somebody says something bad, they're just the most miserable son of bitches in the world. They, you know, they have nothing good to say to nobody. They have nothing good to say. This is me. If you know anything about my wrestling business at all, you know Ricky Morton has a fucking mullet. He's always had one. And he's never going to cut it. All right? That's just who I am. And as right now, being 67 years old, I can walk in anywhere, and that's what really pisses Robert off, because he, you know, I walk right in, and I'm recognized right off the bat. You hear what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I went to the Tennessee football game Saturday. Holy shit, I thought they were going to move me, you know, because people was just all around. And but you say, that's cool, though, Dutch. I live for that. Yeah. You know, my son asked me, they say, you get tired of it? I said, hell no, I don't get tired of it. That's how I still make a living.
And, right.
You're damn right, and that's
you know, if it hadn't been for wrestling, you and me both would have had to go out and get a job and actually yes. work.
Get a job.
Dad, I ain't doing that crap.
Hey, shit. Dutch, listen to me, and I'm not trying to be mean. I'm going to have to go. I had to get to the airport. I shot over
my thing. God, I might not let you go.
Let
me ask you one thing. How old are you right now?
I'm 67.
Hey, how long are you going to go till you stop working totally?
Well, I'm working at Dutch, but you know what? Me and Robert are starting to do a lot of signings. You know, we do these Comic Cons. I still do a lot of them, but it's going to come that part of time that we're going to have to do that. I don't know. I'm going to stay here long as my
for son your last match. I would go to the ring in a wheelchair, get out, and do a couple of moves, and get back in the chair and leave, just to set a record.
Because
if you wrestle, to one day after you're 70, that means you've wrestled like probably six decades.
Yeah, I got you. You know what I mean? I told Billy Corgan. You know Billy Corgan owns NWA.
I know him.
Yes, he's a good guy. I promised him that when Robert got his hip replaced, and when he comes back, I promised him that we do the Rock and Roll Express last match on NWA. So he wanted to do that, so I'm going to do that for him. But listen, I'm going to say something right now, and I hope you take this, and I hope that you know who I am. I'm grateful for every moment that I had in this business, and I'm grateful for every moment I got to know you, your wife, and your daughters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I don't forget nothing. You were good to my daddy. My daddy loved you. I watched you can make my daddy laugh. They piss on himself, because it was funny going down the roads, and talk about how hot it was in Iran or Saudi Arabia.
Oh my God. He had, I still remember that story. Hey, boy, how hot was it? It's hot as hell. Oh my God, I'd have to think about that story. 130. But God.
130 in the shade. 130 in the winter. 140.
Oh, he was too much.
No.
I loved your daddy. Yeah, he was funny.
And I loved you. That's what I was getting to. Thank you, Dutch. Thank you for being a part of my life. Thank you for teaching me a lot. And I promise you, I absolutely love you. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Where are you going today? Where's this plane taking you to?
I'm going to right down the road from you. I wish I did this podcast at your house tonight.
You should have. We'd have had a few drinks. Listen, Ricky, safe travels and stay in contact. Love you, man.
I will. Bye, Dutch.
Hey, we never got to the Steve Kern story either. Well, that's for part two. Part two.
That's part two. Part two.
Thank you very much for watching, everybody. We didn't do the plugs. And I don't know where the books are either. Anyway,
we didn't do the plugs.
No, we didn't. So there's two books over Dutch's left shoulder there. The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road. If you want them unsigned, you can buy them from Amazon. And if you want them signed, you can go to dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. Send an email that way and you will be able to sort out a price signed for those two tomes.
And I'm also, I do University of Dutch diplomas mm-hmm. that are actually doing very well.
Yeah.
The price this week, price changes. It's $45, which is shipping included. And you write me and tell me what you want the diploma to say. Your name is installed on as a graduate in the... And it's a PhD in the wrestling arts. And it's actually signed by the dean, which is Dutch Mantel, that's me, and by the provost of the college, Zeb Coulter. Plus, it has a stamp, and it's sealed, and it's really, really, it comes ready to hang. And it's really, really, it's impressive. I'm kind of impressed by my idea that I even came up with. So, who else has a wrestling diploma?
Well, I know. Nobody. I don't. You've been threatening to send me one for a year, and you've not sent it me.
Well, I got it made. You never give me your address.
I did give you my address. I'll send you my address. Well, hang on. Do you know what? I need to send you my new address. You can send it there.
Okay.
Whenever I move
in. I'll do that as the house warning.
Yeah. I'll have it on the back wall and everything. It'd be great advertising.
I will send you one.
Very
give
good.
Give me the new address. When is the new address going to be, ready to go?
Well, by the time this comes out, I'm hoping now. So, but we'll just see.
When are you moving into the house?
This late November. We've got an eye on it. So, late November, move in, and hopefully I'll be in for there and then... bright, lovely certificate to go in there. And before I go, I actually found the books. The Dwayne The Rock Johnson, The People's Champion, and Owen Hart, King of Pranks. Two fine books. By now, hopefully, the Pro Wrestling Tea Shop's open. and, you know, 5 stars on iTunes, good reviews and all that. But for now, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again next week. And Dutch, we the people.
We the people.